Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us. This is a special edition of our program. We are doing an in-depth investigative report, the case of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, and also, by extension, the reappraisal of Andrew Wakefield's original research with a large group of highly trained experts and academics and physicians that we believe will show that he should be completely exonerated in light of legal and scientific evidence and the recent concerted effort to mandate vaccinations nationally. Joining us from Austin, Texas, is Dr. Andrew Wakefield, a gastroenterologist and academician specializing in inflammatory bowel disease and the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, the MMR. He is a former fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons and was published in over 130 original scientific magazines and book chapters. His recent efforts have been to bring to the world's attention what the truth is about the safety and efficacy of the MMR vaccine. He is the co-founder and director of Autism Media Channel, which airs on various TV stations, autismmediachannel.com. He is also in the recent documentary, Who Killed Alex? And it's a powerful account of U.S. healthcare system negligence that led to the death of a severely autistic teenager. He is the author of Callous Disregard, Autism and Vaccines, The Truth Behind the Tragedy. He is joined by Dr. David Lewis from Georgia. Dr. Lewis is a former senior research microbiologist with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's Research and Development Department and the only EPA scientist to be a lead author on a research paper published in Nature, The Lancet, and Natural Medicine magazines. He was responsible for discovering that HIV could be transmitted through certain dental equipment, which led to the standardization of heat sterilization in dentistry. His research also forced the EPA to abandon the policy of promoting sewage sludge on farms, which subsequently forced him to lose his job when he turned his attention to studying illnesses and deaths associated with this practice, including biosolids linked to autism. He's received many awards and is currently the senior science advisor to the National Whistleblower Center. He also received the research materials from Dr. Wakefield and has done his own analysis, especially of Brian Deer, the man who has challenged Wakefield. He is the author of a recently published book, Science for Sale, which details how the U.S. government uses powerful corporations and leading universities to support policies and silence top scientists, jeopardize public health, all to protect corporate profits. And he will talk about the MMR vaccine. And he has joined in studio Jim Moody. Jim Moody is Dr. Wakefield's attorney and is the director of the family advocacy organization, the National Autism Association, which provide excellent resources on autism and vaccine-related issues, and a director of the research think tank Strategic Autism Alliance. He is a former member of the Vaccine Injury Petitioners Bar Association, and he practices public interest law in Washington. He has degrees in artificial intelligence management from MIT, and he completed his law degree at Georgetown University. That is our panel. I welcome all of you to our program. I'd like to begin with you, Dr. Wakefield. I want to first put this in proper perspective. I believe that we must pull back from the individual issues and look at the larger context that we're faced with. We're told right now that a parent is not an expert on their child's health and therefore is putting the children in schools with their child as well as their own child at risk by not mandating certain vaccines. In California yesterday, not surprising, even though the preponderance of input from citizens was against the mandatory vaccine with no exemptions for religious beliefs or philosophical beliefs, all we have to do is follow the money trail of which legislators receive money or coaching from the American Legislative Exchange Council supporters or lobbyists. And like in any other state, we then see what the outcome of that legislation is, irrespective of what the public demands. We're also told that all vaccines, no exception, are safe and effective. We are told that it is a rare exception for someone to become ill, but if they do become ill, not a problem, the government will compensate them. None of that, of course, is true if you are the victim of a vaccine-related injury. The doctors who have taken the time to study the issue have spent thousands upon thousands of hours reading virtually the entire body of scientific evidence on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, such as Dr. Humphreys, Susanna Humphreys, or Dr. Nancy Banks, or others. Now, they will come to a conclusion, all of them that I've spoken with, including Dr. Tony Bark, who we had on the show yesterday, and she spent over 6,000 hours researching it, and she was pro-vaccine when she was a pediatrician at New York University. They all say they would never give a vaccine or advocate a vaccine because there is no solid proof that a given vaccine will be guaranteed to work without injury on any given child, let alone some combination. But the issue that I'm concerned with is that those who are proponents of vaccine, who want to mandate it, and who are highly critical of anyone who doesn't want to vaccinate, all are affiliated at some level with the pharmaceutical industry. Front groups, what are called AstroTurf. And AstroTurf is a group that has a consumer-friendly sounding name, a populist name, but is really funded by the pharmaceutical industry. And by the way, I'm sure you know that also goes for a lot of the autism groups. They're fully funded by big pharma. They'll acknowledge autism is bad. They'll acknowledge that a vaccine may have caused someone who is susceptible, but they believe that we need safer vaccines. So they're part of that whole group of which many of the anti-vax groups are not really anti-vax. They're anti-dangerous vax. And hence they want to see safer vaccines, but they would still go ahead and give their children all the recommended vaccines, hoping that the next batch will be safe. For the enlightened, educated, really conscientious consumer, then they would say, hold on a second, you're putting formaldehyde in a vaccine and directly into my child's body. You're taking a non-differentiated immune system, one that has not fully matured, and you're giving it highly inflammatory agents, including mercury and polysorbate 80, over 80 different ingredients, none of those shown to be safe, and some carcinogenic, including in the flu vaccine, and parts per billion of mercury in virtually all the vaccines. What you would condemn in wood that would outgas formaldehyde and bring down a whole company because their wood is made in China and formaldehyde is a preservative in the wood, you have no problem putting that same formaldehyde in my child's body. Is there a disconnect in reality? You look at the vaccine makers who cannot be sued. You look at the fact that they now have 261 additional vaccines in development that they want to give people, not just children, but adults. You see a National Institute of Health program coming together saying the emphasis now should be on adults, that if you did not agree to be vaccinated, you could be excluded from all forms of programs that the government controls. You also see that the number of people injured from vaccines compared to those that actually receive compensation is about 95% do not connect their injury to a vaccine, or the doctor does not accept it, or the system rejects it. So it's an enormously difficult challenge to get justification and some form of compensation for an injury. All any physician or nurse or pharmacist, because they're all equally responsible, who gives an injection to the MMR vaccine, all they would have to do is look at the physician's desk reference. Quote, from the physician's desk reference, every single body system is adversely affected by the MMR vaccine. Your blood, your lymphatic system, digestive system, cardiovascular system, immune system, nervous system, respiratory system, and sensory system. Encephalitis, encephalopathy, neurological disorders, seizure disorders, convulsions, learning disabilities, subacute sclerosing, demyelinization of the nerve sheath leading to multiple sclerosis, muscle incoordination, deafness, vasculitis, optic neuritis, retinitis, otitis media, bronchial spasms, arthritis, acute and chronic, transverse myelitis, thrombocytopenia, which is blood clotting disorders and spontaneous bleeding, anaphylaxis, which is a serial allergic reaction leading to death, leukocytosis, Steven Johnson syndrome, pancreatitis, and death, and meningitis, and Crohn's disease, and immune system disorders. How in the world could any person of conscience, any person, knowingly put that into a child's body, and then when the child goes wrong, when some system, whether it's digestive, neurological, begins to get out of order, say that it had nothing to do with this? That's where we're starting. The form is yours.
Well, Gary, thank you very much. It's great to be back on, and you've articulated the current state of affairs extremely comprehensively. Not dwelling on my own position for the moment, but looking at this from the 10,000-foot perspective, I think that there are two major lessons for medical profession and mankind, and that is, one, you cannot cheat nature. And you raise the issue of antibiotics, extremely important issue, heralded as one of the great achievements, a miracle, a medical miracle, when they first came out. And clearly they had a profound effect upon injuries in the Second World War, the arena of the Second World War, and then on neurosyphilis and this kind of thing. But the dream has become a nightmare. And it's become a nightmare because you cannot cheat nature. And that is because organisms adapt extremely rapidly and develop resistance. And so now we have a situation where we have multi-resistant organisms which are infecting wounds and prostheses and closing hospitals and wards down. And the pharmaceutical industry has abandoned the research and development of new antibiotics because by the time they bring them to market, the organisms are already resistant. In other words, the dream has become a nightmare, and exactly the same is happening with vaccination. And we saw escape mutants forming with the earliest introduction of the hepatitis B vaccine, such that that has now become the dominant quasi-species of hepatitis B. I just read an article on polio the other day, and exactly the same thing has happened with the use of the oral polio vaccine. We've now produced quasi-species of polio virus, which are highly pathogenic, which are resistant to the immunity that is induced by the vaccine. So that particular dream, in quotes, is now emerging into a nightmare. You cannot cheat nature, and this process of resistance develops more and more rapidly as the genetic machinery is acquired to do it by the organism. And that is a major, major problem for the future. Of course, for the industry, what they do is produce a new vaccine, and so you have to have the old and the new vaccine, and that is a pipeline of profit that will go on and on and on forever, particularly since they have no liability. So that is one major problem. The other problem is one of trust in one's instincts. Maternal instinct is the most powerful force on this planet. We would not be here without it. We are not here because of public health or because of the medical profession, quite the opposite. People have been had their instincts usurped by the medical profession. They've become unable to trust in their own judgment and relied upon the men in the white coats who know absolutely nothing about the well-being of their children compared with mothers. And that is a biological imperative that has served us well for millions of years. So we need, as doctors, to trust in what the parents say, because they know their children like no one else. And medicine is about humility. It's about listening to the parent's story and acting upon it, not assuming in your arrogance and your ignorance that you know better, because you don't. And that is one of the major reasons that we have reached this disastrous point, this juncture in human evolution right now. And we really are at crossroads. We can either decide that we own our own bodies, are in control of the bodies of our children, or we can hand them over to the pharmaceutical industry, and they become a profit center from cradle to grave. And it really is as serious as that. And if people don't get that, then they really, really need to wake up, because they're taking away, or trying to take away, the rights of parents around the country. And I can see a situation where soon the sheriff will turn up and the prisons will be full of good and caring parents who have simply declined to have their children vaccinated, and then their children will be taken away vaccinated, given everything at once that they have not had on schedule, and then the parents will be given back the product of that intervention and told to deal with it. So an extremely, extremely important point, an extremely important time, and people need to be aware of what's going on.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. Now to the specifics, because I've always been concerned when an injustice has occurred. And as you know, we from the very beginning did our investigation on you before we ever called you. And I simply said to our producer, after doing about a year's worth of work, this man is innocent of all charges. And you look at all the media and you think you were guilty of everything. So I want you to take your time now, because here's the nuts and bolts of it for this audience. Now that we have a whistleblower at the CDC who's come out and, in, for all intents and purposes, shown that there was over 316% increase in young African-American boys having autism if they were vaccinated before or after 36 months. And that was what was hidden. That was what was changed. That was what was altered. So begin... For the record, during the British court proceedings against you and your colleagues, which was, by the way, unprecedented in British history, given that it took over 200 days of deliberation and was fraught with obstacles and improprieties, were any judgments ruled that discredited your findings on the GI inflammatory associated with the MMR vaccine on strictly scientific grounds, or was it really just a case of cherry-picking questionable actions, regardless of the science, as an indirect way to discredit the science by discrediting you personally and your colleagues? In other words, based upon the court proceedings, does the research finding still hold as valid?
Yes, absolutely, Gary, they do. It was an administrative proceeding rather than a formal legal proceeding. And as you pointed out, the only time that this ever came before a formal legal proceeding, that is Justice Mitting in the English High Court, it was absolutely demolished. The GMC were told that it would be a shame if this were to ever happen again, and they changed their entire procedure as a consequence and apologized to the judge for the way in which the proceedings were conducted. Unfortunately, that didn't do me much good because I didn't have the money to continue with my appeal. Nonetheless, Professor Walker-Smith was completely exonerated of all charges, and the nonsense that Deere confabulated against us fell away. Nonetheless, it remains the sort of dominant theme in the media that is paid for by the pharmaceutical industry. However, our story was really about the discovery of a novel inflammatory bowel disease in children with autism. And I should say, now 20 years on, one of the most consistent findings, if not the most consistent finding in autism research, is of gastrointestinal abnormalities in this population of children, providing insights into how the children might be treated and ultimately this disease might be prevented. The sadness is, of course, many, many children have gone to the wall in the meantime because doctors are too frightened to investigate the bowel symptoms in these children because they are synonymous in the minds of many with vaccine injury, and they do not want to be, as they say now, Wakefielded. It's a very, very sad situation. Nonetheless, it's been a privilege working with these families and the children, and I would not change it for everything that has happened because it's given me very valuable insights, and I remain very active in trying to put this right.
By the way, the CDC's information is completely wrong, not unusual. They say that 1 to 2 children out of every 1,000 with measles dies. We found that's not true at all. None. In fact, in the last 11 years, we haven't found a death from measles, but we found 109 deaths from the vaccine for measles. So isn't it amazing that our official organization can lie, patently lie, about the statistics, and no one's challenging them?
Yes, I mean, what, Gary, the numbers, the statistics that come out of the CDC on morbidity and mortality from infectious disease are, in the words of one of their own senior members, Donald Henderson, a pure air creation. A pure air creation. They are simply made up in order to terrify people into getting vaccinated against a killer disease, which, of course, it was not measles. The mortality and morbidity from measles was declining rapidly as the 20th century progressed. And that is a function largely of the way in which organisms and their hosts interact over time, becoming less and less of a virulent problem. But the CDC themselves cannot be trusted to do anything, in the words of Dr. William Thompson, in relation to vaccine safety. They have
tell
a specific
us about,
lecture
tell,
given there. Sorry, go on.
Tell us about Dr. Thompson, please.
Dr. Thompson is a senior scientist from the CDC, a statistician and epidemiologist, very, very highly commended and widely published, whose conscience troubled him terribly after they tested a hypothesis that, in fact, we put forward in 2000, suggesting that the age of exposure to MMR was a major risk factor for autism. The younger you got it, the greater the risk. And we gave them this hypothesis. They tested it in children at the Atlanta metro area, and they found it was true. They spent the next 4 years conceiving the data. They found two major subgroups were at risk. One, as you pointed out, were African-American children, boys in particular, and the other, an equally important and very large population, is children who were developmentally normal to age one, a group that they called isolated autism, in other words, no other associated problems. And this is very much the pattern of autism that we see now. These are children who are developing normally, and then they plateau or they regress. And those two major subgroups, they found to be at substantially, significantly higher risk of autism following early MMR. And I should say MMR vaccination on time, according to the CDC schedule, so by 18 months, those were the children at greatest risk. And they spent a long time hiding those data from the Institute of Medicine, obstructing justice, because the IOM then feeds its opinions onto the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. 5,000 cases thrown out of court, quoting the safety of the vaccine, according to that study, and so on. It goes on, it rolls on and on and on. The deception is absolutely enormous.
Did you know what was recently discovered? The British Health Ministry, a document was uncovered, and it was addressed use and storage of live attenuated measles vaccine. It states in Section 7, quote, routine vaccination that live measles vaccine should not be given to children below the age of 9 months, since it usually fails to immunize such children owing to the presence of maternally transmitted antibodies. So that was the official knowledge, yet they did not disseminate that. And as a result, young children younger than 9 received this vaccine with all of its attenuated damage that it could do and no benefit. So this just shows you the power of economic policy controlling healthcare systems. Your final thought on this, please?
Yes, what has become clear to me over the many years of working in this is the puppeteer in all of this is the pharmaceutical industry. Massive amounts of money going into medical journals, into medical education, and we're dealing with companies that are in many ways little more than international criminal enterprises. And you'll know that GlaxoSmithKline is just one example, have been fined billions of dollars around the world, many, many countries, for bribery, corruption, for having drugs given to individuals without any indication or license whatsoever, merely because the doctor has been bought off. It's an utter, utter disgrace, and yet the irony is these companies are the flagship companies, the big earners for their countries, as GSK is for the UK. Medicine itself has become owned by these people. The media has become owned by these people. And it's up to the people now to really break free of this, to realize what has happened, to realize that they are owned by the pharmaceutical industry, and they will continue to be owned until they break those chains. And now is the time that needs to happen.
You're listening to Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who has the original research with a whole team of outstanding researchers. There was good research showing the intestinal disturbances These were gastroenterologists. That was their area of specialization. They were board certified. They were academics. They all had published scientific papers. The entire group was discredited, but they were not able to discredit them on science. And then in comes my next guest, Dr. David Lewis from Georgia. And David, you came to Dr. Wakefield's defense and have reviewed all of the science and are now focusing on the weaknesses in the MMR vaccine. And while Dr. Wakefield's case is usually thought to be solely a British decision, do you have any knowledge whether the U.S. federal health agencies played any role in discrediting Dr. Wakefield and his research team or the research conducted at the Royal Free Hospital? And can you speak on the role of Brian Deer, the person who was bringing all the charges and has been the leading attacker against Dr. Wakefield, between the CDC and the British health authorities in the court?
Certainly. I met Dr. Wakefield at a conference in 2011, and that was when Anderson Cooper and others launched their all-out attacks on him on CNN News, and the British Medical Journal was leading the charge, providing the allegations that were put forth by Brian Deer, a reporter. And so that caught my attention, just watching the news while the conference was going on. And I approached Dr. Wakefield during a break in the conference and asked him whether any of the allegations were true, and he said that none of them were true. And so I asked him whether or not the records associated with the General Medical Council hearings were still in his possession, and could I have access to them if I wanted to look at them myself. The reason that I approached him is because what I have called institutional research misconduct or institutional scientific misconduct has become prevalent, where you see federal agencies getting together with major industry commercial products, and you have the government agencies defending their policies, and you have the industry defending their products, their commercial products, and the science gets destroyed in between that. Both those entities are funding universities to promote government policies and certain industry practices, and they're working together to destroy any scientist who raises questions about the government policies or the industry practices. So I've studied that over the years. I gave a presentation at Harvard University in 2011 as a member of a three-person panel. One of the other persons was the vice provost for research at Harvard at the time. Another was a medical professor at Harvard. And we discussed these issues, and it's when I introduced the concept of institutions being involved in scientific misconduct. So I was interested in whether it might be possible that Dr. Wakefield's case was a case such as that, where you have government agencies and big corporations trying to destroy a scientist's credibility in order to stop their research and, more importantly, to send a message to other scientists throughout the world not to do the same thing or the same thing will happen to them. And so Dr. Wakefield was more than generous enough to provide me with copies of his records that he had kept and brought over to the United States from the U.K., I traveled out to his home at one point and went through the files while I stayed there several days. And I also reviewed the transcripts of the General Medical Council hearings. I went through thousands and thousands of documents, and I compared them with Brian Deer's various allegations of ethics violations, of undisclosed conflicts of interest involving patents, a host of allegations of ethics and research misconduct coming from this reporter who has no training in medicine or science and sort of came out of nowhere. Nobody heard of him before then, and he hasn't really done anything since then. He just appeared with this one mission and disappeared. So I spent over a year combing through the documents and discovered some rather astounding documents that have never been published anywhere that clearly prove beyond any shadow of doubt that Brian Deer's allegations could not possibly be true. I also collectively submitted my findings and the evidence to the British Medical Journal and asked that they publish a commentary where I cited the documents that were never made public that proved that Brian Deer's allegations cannot be true, and I provided the evidence, the direct evidence, for them to publish with the commentary. They not only rejected the commentary, Fiona Godley, the editor-in-chief, but she turned around and invited me to resubmit not a commentary, but a short, what they called a rapid response, just summarizing what I had to say about selected evidence involving the allegations against Dr. Wakefield. And I accepted the invitation and submitted a summary of my findings in several hundred words. My commentary was 5,000 words. And then I linked to the documents, the critical documents that had never been made public that proves Dr. Wakefield's innocence. And Dr. Godley and other editors at the British Medical Journal informed me that they were not interested in publishing what I submitted. And they wrote their own version of a rapid response and submitted it to me for my approval. I've never seen anything like that in my career in science. I've never heard of it. And so I was not about to give up. I made certain demands that certain things they'd said which were untrue, certain things that they cut out of what I submitted, I demanded to be left in, and they eventually published what was almost entirely something they had written and put my name to, did not publish any of the graphic evidence in the way of photomicrographs and other evidence I had.
Dr. Lewis, what does that tell you?
I'm sorry, what was the question, Gary?
What does that tell you?
Well, it told me that the entire process that was going on at the British Medical Journal involving Brian Deer and Fiona Godley and the other editors to attack Dr. Wakefield was fraudulent, in my opinion. They were not interested in the truth. They were only interested in maintaining their effort to discredit Dr. Wakefield at any cost, including falsely accusing him of ethics and research misconduct.
Okay. So if I understand you correctly, and I don't want to misstate you, after spending a great deal of time, more than a year, researching the evidence from the court proceedings, the hearing proceedings of the British Medical Commission that oversaw this, looking at all the documents, including ones that have never been made public, it is your estimated opinion that none of the allegations against Dr. Wakefield or his team engaged in misconduct are true, and you believe that when you tried to correct this and give this to the British Medical Journal, they refused to publish it, instead wanting their own position to be where they would write it and assign your name. You rejected that, and you believe that Dr. Wakefield is innocent of all charges. Is that an accurate or inaccurate assessment of your statements?
Well, it's not only my belief. I have the proof of it. I have overwhelming proof. And I did, in short, come to the conclusion that absolutely none of the allegations Brian Deer and the British Medical Journal published against Dr. Wakefield are true. Not true at all. And that was in 2011. In 2012, the High Court of England came back and said exactly what I said, that none of the General Medical Council's findings were true.
Okay, I'd like for you to do the following, please. I would like for you to submit to my producer, Richard Gale, the article you wrote to the original article, the essay you wrote to the British Medical Journal, and also the High Court, the highest court in England's, concurring with you that there was nothing that they had done wrong, because I would like to do the following. We are going to challenge The Nation magazine today on the air, since many people listen to them, and I have no problem with that because they've done a lot of good work over the decades. Send us that, and we will get it into their hands, and then I'm inviting them on this program to debate me personally. All right?
I would be happy to do that.
Thank you. Dr. David Lewis, our guest, and he was a former senior research microbiologist, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and the only EPA scientist to be a lead author on research published in the most prestigious journal in the world, Nature, as well as The Lancet, as well as Natural Medicine, other publications. So he is there to tell you he did his homework. He found Dr. Wakefield and their entire group, after studying the evidence, innocent. The Supreme Court, the highest court in Britain, found the same. You would never know this existed by reading the extraordinarily biased opinions of those people who have every right to their opinion if they're talking about politics. You can agree or disagree, but now they're talking about people's lives. And I cannot stand by, like so many of the other people, who believe that anything they say is okay. It's not okay. If you're wrong, you're wrong. And they should be called out and held accountable for that misinformation. Jim Moody, nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Nice to be here. And it's wonderful you're doing this topic because it's a matter of the most vital public interest.
It is. This far and above exceeds Andrew Wakefield. Jim, I'd like for you to address the case of Dr. Wakefield's colleague, Dr. Walker Smith, who was also victimized by the British court along with Andrew Wakefield, but who subsequently had been exonerated, completely exonerated, by the highest court in Britain and had his medical license reinstated. Both Dr. Wakefield and Dr. Walker had always stated they were not proposing a direct link between the measles vaccine and autism. It was only a GI symptom commonly found in autistic children that may be due to the viral component in the measles vaccine. So this was not an anti-vaccine study. In fact, until a few years ago, Dr. Wakefield was supportive of vaccine. I don't know his current position, but a lot of times people say, well, it was just a bad vaccine or a bad lot, instead of show me the science on vaccines. That's a separate topic where I will submit to you documentaries, including the silent epidemic, and papers published by Richard Gale and myself, over 34 separate scientific papers in the last 4 years, showing that the toxicologists, the one group of people who are never, never, ever invited to give their opinion, and yet they are the most knowledgeable people. Because let's face it, if I ask you, Dave, what is a vaccinologist? You're aware there is no such thing as a vaccinologist. It doesn't exist. You're either an immunologist or a toxicologist or a general practitioner, so you can study the effect. But I'm talking about immunologists who will tell you what's wrong with vaccines, toxicologists will tell you what's wrong with vaccines, and then vaccinologists who tell you what's right about them, but they don't have science. So I want you to go through this in some detail now, because many of the original rulings of misconduct and irresponsible action and dishonesty that were overturned by Walker equally applied to Andrew Wakefield. So I'd like you to address this, please.
Sure. Okay, Gary. Thank you. Well, first of all, at the 10,000-foot level, the whole proceeding for the licensing board, which in England is called the General Medical Council, the whole proceeding was brought really for two reasons. One is to discredit the general area of inquiry, whether it comes from pediatricians trying to treat these desperately ill autistic children, or to discredit scientific research that might link autism with vaccines. As is common in the tort system, both here and in England, scientists are asked by the courts to serve as expert witnesses to advise the trier of fact, the jury or the court, on the scientific issues. There was a case that actually began in England in the early 90s, funded by the Legal Aid Board over there, which was first looking at the mumps component of the MMR vaccine and eventually the measles component to see if there was a large amount of adverse events, septic meningitis first and then autism. And so Dr. Wakefield was asked to serve as an expert witness in that case. And so the GMC proceeding was brought really on a complaint by Brian Deer, who is actually not a reporter for any recognized publication at all. He's what we'd call in this country a stringer. He just submits his news articles. He is not an expert in any scientific field, has no education or training in any scientific field. And most importantly, his sources of funding have never been disclosed anywhere. So all these charges were really brought against the three doctors, Dr. Wakefield, Dr. Simon Murch, and Professor Walker Smith, the leading pediatric gastroenterologist at the time, to discredit them as serving as potential experts in the tort case in England and in the vaccine case here in our vaccine court. So that was the genesis. That was the reason these charges were brought. The accusation had nothing whatsoever to do with the underlying science, that there was a unique form of bowel disease in autism, that MMR vaccine may or may not be a concern. The opening day of trial, the chairman of the panel said the MMR vaccine is not on trial, the connection to autism is not on trial. And by the way, Dr. Wakefield, at the press conference associated with publication of the Lancet case series, not a study, just a report on 12 children, specifically said in response to a question, take the MMR vaccine, get your vaccine, give some consideration to splitting it to its separate components, but take the vaccine. So from the very beginning, the effort to discredit Dr. Wakefield by saying he's anti-vaccine was simply false. Really, that all blew up in England in part because then Prime Minister Tony Blair snuck off to France, allegedly, to get the separate shots for his children, but at the same time to deny that option to the large population in Britain. So that's really, it was really a dust up in the press and nothing really that Dr. Wakefield had said. Anyway, the GMC accusation was not about the science, it was about ethics. And the essence of the charge was that there was no prior ethical approval to, quote, study, unquote, these children, as the High Court eventually found, and I think another good thing maybe to publish on your website, Gary, would be the opinion of the High Court exonerating Professor Walker Smith, and it's 110 pages, single space, so it's quite long, but it does go through document by document, accusation by accusation, and clears these doctors of any ethical misconduct and sheds a great light on the corruption at the GMC. So we can add that to your website. But the ethical charge, the answer to the ethics charge is one is these children came to the Royal Free Hospital because of the leading gastroenterological practice, number one, one. And number two, Professor Walker-Smith was given specific ethics approval a year before the first child was seen to take gut biopsies as part of the general research being done by that department. That was concealed from the GMC investigation. So the children were seen in clinic to be treated for severe, debilitating, literally life-threatening diseases. That's not research. That's clinical care. And as to the biopsies that eventually led to these pathology slides that Dr. Lewis was talking about, these biopsies were specifically approved by the ethics committee at the Royal Free a year before at the specific request of Professor Walker-Smith. So the high court put this all together and recognized the whole proceeding from the beginning was trumped up and a false attack on these doctors. And it really was the Lancet case series was actually a report by one of the most distinguished medical teams in gastroenterology for pediatrics in the world. The specific results of a unique form of bowel disease in children with autism have been confirmed over and over and over and over again. And most recently, I think it was in 2011, Pediatrics, the leading journal of pediatric medicine here, published a special supplement urging doctors to do a full GI workup on children with autism. So the science has been confirmed over and over and over again that this is a unique form of bowel disease in children. So the genesis of all this was basically just to prevent experts from testifying in the court cases. The reason that's important is because the connection between autism and vaccines is potentially the largest medical, legal, financial cover-up in history, because the government has been paying in vaccine court, largely through secret settlements and beginning in 1990, about $5 million a child over vaccine-caused autism. So when CDC says there is no evidence that vaccines cause autism, they are simply lying, because they are quietly paying hundreds of millions of dollars to settle the cases that do manage to percolate up through the specialized vaccine court. They finally had to admit to journalist rock star Cheryl Atkinson that vaccines cause encephalopathy, which is diagnosed as autism. But again, that is in secret emails, and they're still maintaining this false illusion on their website that vaccines do not cause autism. Why? Because it would potentially lead to over $1 trillion in liability. That's also why Dr. Stefano, for leading the team in 2004 that published on MMR, engaged in a cover-up of the evidence to basically tip the cases in vaccine court, and why a separate team led by Dr. Verstraten of the CDC covered up the connection between mercury, one of the most toxic substances on the planet, and autism and other neurological diseases in a paper published in 2003. And his cover-up was done by deleting from his study all the unvaccinated children once he had found that the relative risk for autism based on the amount of mercury in vaccines was 7.62, well above the level that establishes causation. So in both MMR and in the mercury experiments that CDC conducted and funded, there's been an obstruction of justice and a cover-up essentially to throw in court over $1 trillion in liability.
Final quick answer I need from you because we're out of time. Do you believe that it's possible legally at any level to bring those accountable for covering up inside official government agencies, CDC, FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, the fact that they have known the truth about vaccines causing injury, including autism spectrum disorder, have intentionally covered it up? Should there not be a way for the public to be able to hold these people accountable legally?
It is unfortunately very hard in our system to hold federal officials accountable for their misdeeds. In lawsuits, there are a tiny number of recognized exceptions, but the Supreme Court, in this doctrine called sovereign immunity, for 200 years has given an exemption to federal employees to cover up their corruption. The appropriate way to do it, to start the ball rolling, is congressional hearings There has been one in front of the Committee on Government Oversight. There should be more. This is in front of Darrell Issa. Congressman Burton in the early decade, 2000s, had held a series of six hearings. That would get the ball rolling, so people to be involved in this issue should contact their local congressman and insist on full and public and transparent hearings in the Congress to get the information out so that, the public can react, state legislatures can react, lawyers can react, but the process of holding these people accountable can begin by getting all the information out in the public light. And that, at the state level, must begin by adhering to the basic principle of ethics, which is in medicine, which is informed consent. People always have a right to refuse a medicine of any choice, and that the first question people should ask their doctor when they are pushed vaccines is, where is the data on the health of unvaccinated children? It does not exist. These state bills now, because Mickey Mouse caught the measles, threaten a return to Nazi-era medicine that's practiced without ethics, without informed consent. And hopefully the debates occurring in the state legislatures will raise that issue. People will insist on their right to refuse vaccine or any other medical treatment and will insist on getting the science done correctly. Science drives law. Science must get us to the answers both on safer vaccines and on obtaining compensation for any child injured, quote, for the greater good.
Thank you, Jim Moody, for being out there and a voice for the voiceless. Dr. David Lewis, thank you, and we look forward to the articles. And Jim, please send us all the important relevant material. We'll post it. And to give you an idea, we had 26 million people in 7 days come to the site to see the information. So we are the source for progressive information in the world. And Dr. Andrew Wakefield, we look forward to another program when sooner or later the entire medical and scientific establishment will realize you were innocent and the people who are guilty of this should be held accountable if no other reason in the court of public opinion. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Gary.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.